It's Thursday, August 28th, and you're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm Mark B. Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, sitting in today for Bill Buckmaster, who is at home this week convalescing. The double B in his dulcet voice should be back on the air next week, but in the meantime, you have to put up with the cast of rookies he's cobbled together this week to fill in. We have a great show for you today, leading off with Democrat Nancy Youngwright, who's a candidate for Pima County Board of Supervisors District 1. We'll follow her with Nancy's opponent in that race, Republican Allie Miller, fresh off her hard-fought victory in the Republican primary Tuesday. In the second half of the show, we'll have Demian Klinko, president of the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, to talk about the state of historic preservation in the city. And we'll close the show with my compatriot at TucsonCitizen.com, sports writer extraordinaire Anthony Jimeno, who will talk to us about the start of the Rich Rodriguez era for the Arizona Wildcats, whose first game of the season is Saturday. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Learn more about Splendido over breakfast at the Hilton Tucson East on Thursday, September 20th at 9:30 a.m. RSVP and say you heard about this on the Buckmaster Show to 762-4090. That's 762-4090. SplendidoTucson.com. Now that we've got bills paid, let's get to it with Nancy Youngwright and her Board of Supervisors candidacy. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome yourself there, Mr. Guest Host. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Hey, we only got about 10 minutes, so let's jump right into it here.
Let's do.
In the past 10 years or so, the Democratic majority in the Board of Supes have packed just about every Republican in the district, in the county, into District 1 and District 4. So as a Democrat, you've got about a 9 percentage point registration gap that you've got to overcome, which means you're going to have to get all the Democrats, a bunch of the independents, and probably some Republicans to vote for you. So how are you going to do that?
Well, just looking forward to taking my message out, Mark, and talking about my record of moderate bipartisan work that I've been doing in the community for 30 years. I think voters are probably going to be happy to have an alternative to Ms. Miller because she's frankly too extreme for District 1. I think once voters learn more about her deep ties to the Tea Party and comments such as thinking Sarah Palin would be a great senator for Arizona, they might feel differently about her. Unfortunately, I think she shoots first and she verifies her facts later. And I would refer your listeners to Jim Mensel's fine work on that subject about road bonds and other things in his articles. Also, I think people would want to know about the Maricopa County-funded Independent Expenditure Committee that's been set up to influence this election and others in Pima County. I don't think Pima County residents really want Maricopa County telling us what to do. And I really don't think they want their supervisors being controlled by Maricopa County Tea Party people. So those are some of my thoughts right now off the cuff.
Those are reasons to vote against Allie Miller, not to vote for Nancy Youngwright. Sure. Give us some reasons to vote for you, as independents or Republicans.
You bet. Well, I wanted to talk with you and your listeners, Mark, about my 30 years of work in the community. I served 10 years on the Amphi School Board, where I was successful at changing that culture of corruption that we had there, along with many other people in the community, and also the work of a lot of journalists, such as yourself and Jim Nensel and Tony Davis. It took a community effort, but we were able to lower administrative overhead, bring about transparency, we were able to lower class sizes, and we were able to raise teacher pay and keep art, music, and PE. So I feel that is a really good record to stand on of all of my good work there. And I have a record in the legislature of fighting for public education, clean air, clean water, and sensible policies, and with working with Republicans. So I think that hopefully your listeners can learn more about me and also, I'm the parent of two daughters who were raised right here in Tucson. My husband and I have been here together in this district for 30 years. I'm a fourth-generation Southwesterner, so I think I have a very good understanding of what our needs are in the community. I support sensible land use planning and sensible land uses, and I'm not for really rocking the boat on stuff that we've done with our land use policies because we've worked really hard on things like the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. And I think that's another contrast between me and Ms. Miller, is I don't think she's got the same ideas that I do. She doesn't support Impact D. She doesn't seem to support the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. And I don't know that she's going to be, if she's going to be taking orders from Phoenix, I think that's very troubling to those of us who love Pima County and who love Tucson, as I do.
So Miller and a lot of the other Republicans who are running for the other supervisors' races have been making a lot about the county's tax rate and that county taxes are too high. The person you're replacing, Ann Day, has voted against the county budget 7 out of the last 8 years. The only time she's voted on for the budget in the last since 2004 was this year. So if you had been on the board this year, would you have voted for this budget?
You know, I think I would have, Mark. Contrary to what a lot of the spin is out there about the county, we're different from other counties. There's 15 counties in Arizona. About the only one you can really compare us to is Maricopa County. The others are so rural. And we're not incorporated. I mean, most of Maricopa County is. Most of Pima County isn't. So we're also much larger than they are in land size. So it costs us more to run parks, to run sheriffs, to do roads here. And people don't want to be incorporated. They don't want a sales tax in the county. I don't want one either. We don't have one. We're the only county that doesn't. So people pay taxes in different ways in Maricopa County other than property taxes, but you can write your property taxes off. So yeah, I'd like to see them become lowered, but we also have to deal with reality here and what residents have chosen, particularly in District 1, which I'm seeking to represent. More than 70% of it is unincorporated, and so far people in the foothills in particular have rejected either being annexed by the city or they've rejected forming their own towns. I mean, you were there when Casas Adobes went down and when the foothills annexation, or rather incorporation went down.
Right. In fact, I was pulling for Casas Adobes because I was the editor of the Explorer at the time, and it would have been a great boon to the paper that I was working at. But I was sad to see that was finally defeated. Related to the county's budget is the discussion about the debt and especially that's been voter approved through bond elections. The county's bond committee has estimated, based on the requests that it's gotten from the other jurisdictions in the county, that there's about a $2 billion in unmet need in terms of infrastructure improvements, parks, libraries, changing out of and improving some of the buildings and the facilities that the county uses. And so there's a couple of bond elections packages that are kind of sitting in the wings waiting to go forward. One of them is the recent one, which is the $200 million package for roads around Raytheon and the airport. And then another one is a general package that's could be quite large. It could be as much as $700 million, depending on how the committee decides to fund it or the Board of Supervisors. But they're sitting there waiting for the economy to get better. They're waiting for voting mood to get better. But meanwhile, these needs are not being met. So what's your take on the county's debt, whether we need more bond elections, and if you do, should we be doing that sooner or later?
I think we need to proceed cautiously on taking on more debt. There's some very fine work that was recently done by Jim Denzel and Emil Franze in the Weekly, and they talk about the county's debt level and why it is what it is. And they talk also about how 37% of it comes from improvements to the wastewater system, and that's because the federal government made us start to work on a new sewage plant that's going to replace the one that's inadequate out on Roger Road. I think we all know it is. So there's major community needs that we've been trying to pay for with these. It doesn't mean that something is wrong about what's being proposed in the future. It just means we have to proceed cautiously. I do know they've been trying their best, from listening to discussion there at the Board of Supervisors, only to take on new bonds when they paid off the other ones to keep the rate the same for taxpayers. So that I certainly would endorse. And I also feel we have to be careful about the reserves that we keep. And I differ a little bit with Supervisor Day on this. During the debate about fixing the roads, she wanted to remove more funds from reserves than they did for emergency pothole repair. And your listeners know that our legislators swept our funds, not me when I was there. So I think we have to be cautious, though, about that, because if we sweep too much from our reserves or use too much from our reserves, then we affect our bond rating. So all in all, have there been some problems in the distant past with our bond spending? Yeah, it sounds like, there was. There were problems. In fact, I got started on getting involved in getting park equipment for my kids up here in Moore Valley because the supervisors moved our money for park equipment. So that, it used to happen. And, it still can legally happen with some transfers, but I think by and large with the Bond Oversight Committee and the regulations they have in place, that it's a far better system than it once was.
So what is the most pressing need that's in your district that needs to be taken care of if you get elected and you get on that board? What's the thing that you're going to be championing for right away that needs to get done for the people in District 1?
People are needing jobs. You know, that's a common cry across the country, and that's the same thing in District 1. And we're needing good jobs to keep our kids here. You know, we've got a real brain drain going on in Pima County. So I'd like to refer listeners to Pima.gov. They can access an economic development report that the community worked on real hard in the last year with the county, and they come up with, you know, pretty much three different ideas that are sensible. And one idea, of course, is to keep our employers here that we already have, hence that bond purchase of buffer land near Raytheon. The second one is to attract new businesses and work with the U of A to do that. And a recent Accelerate example is a really good one, where the county and state and the U of A work together to bring another biotech firm in. And the other main key component is job training. So I think those are really important things for our entire community, but also my district. And District 1 has a lot of biotech in it, and we'd like to see that expand. And the other thing, of course, that people want, we want our roads repaired. And we have a lot of ancient, failing roads that were built to, you know, pretty lousy standards 30, 40, 50 years ago that are going to cost quite a lot of money to replace. So, you know, those basic needs, and we've been suffering in this economic downturn. The one thing we can't go back to, Mark, this is from my experience up in the state legislature, we fell so hard in Arizona and had such a bust with our economy here for a couple of reasons. One is we're too sales tax dependent on the state level with our budget. And the second was being too dependent just on one industry, and that's building houses. So we have to get smarter this time and diversify what we're doing.
And we're just about out of time. If people want to find more information out about your campaign, is there some place they can go online?
You bet, Mark. They can go to www.nancyyoungwright.com. They're also welcome to call me at 520-742-7283.
We've got to go to a break. Nancy, thanks for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Great talking to you, Mark. Take care.
Thanks very much. We'll be back after these messages with Allie Miller.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pedorthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
We're back. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm Mark B. Evans, erstwhile editor of TucsonCitizen.com, sitting in for Bill today. We just finished an interview with Nancy Young Wright, and joining us now on the phone is her opponent in that Board of Supervisors race, Republican Allie Miller. Allie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Good afternoon.
Hey, it's good seeing you. Hearing from you. Congratulations on your primary win. That was a squeaker.
More than a squeaker. I won by 6 points, and it was a lot of hard work, and we had a lot of volunteers who believed in me, and they certainly believed in my message. And they know that I'm going to be fearless, bold, and I'm going to hold them accountable. And that's why we had the success that we did. We worked really hard, and I'm absolutely thrilled. It has been a wild ride for the last year, and someone with zero name recognition coming out of nowhere and coming up against people who have name recognition and individuals who have been involved with the establishment in Pima County for years. And winning this has been just very thrilling, and we're ready. We are already at work, and we're ready to take on our opponent in the next phase of the election.
So about 62% of the Republicans who cast a vote in that primary didn't vote for you. So what do you have to do over the next few weeks to shore up that Republican support as you head into the general?
Well, we're working hard to get our message out, and we're working hard to unite the party. I hope the Republican Party does unite behind me, and I believe they are. I'm getting a lot of outreach, a lot of phone calls from various individuals who worked against me, and I think we're going to circle the wagons and work hard together.
And while you've got a registration advantage, about 9 percentage points above the Democrat, the independents still hold the balance of power because it's only about 40% of the district is Republican. So you're going to have to get some independents to vote for you and maybe some Democrats. So how are you going to do that?
That's correct. I already have some Democrats and independents supporting me. And the way that you do that is I keep putting my message out that I've been putting out all year. I'm going to represent the interests of the taxpayers, not the special interests. And this is what has been going on in Pima County for years. And what I heard from Ms. Young Wright just a few minutes ago is that she's not going to rock the boat. That sounds like more of the same to me. And what we need are people that are willing to hold them accountable and have new ideas. You know, we need a new, fresh look at the way that things are run in Pima County. And one of the things that we need to do is the number one priority is getting jobs into Pima County. We need less regulation. We need to partner with the University of Arizona. I went to school. I went to undergrad and graduate school at the University of Arizona. Why we aren't using them as a job incubator for new startups in Pima County is beyond me. We need to be collaborating with our state legislatures, reaching out to them, asking them how we can work with them to bring jobs into Pima County. There was a report that there were somewhere in the neighborhood of 69,000 jobs came into Arizona in the last year, and very few of them came to Pima County. What are we doing wrong? We need to figure that out. We also need to collaborate and learn from Oro Valley, Marana. Their leadership are doing the right things, obviously, because those communities are growing and doing very well in an economic downturn. So we need to be prepared when the economy starts moving forward and work on those issues that we need to work on to make Pima County more attractive for businesses to come to and to keep our students here. I was one of those students who had to leave. I went to work up in Phoenix at Intel when I got out of graduate school because the jobs weren't here. So I'm very passionate about working with the U of A and making sure that we're keeping the brain power here in Pima County.
So Nancy called you a Tea Party candidate. Is that accurate? Do you call yourself that?
You know, this is what they do, and it just makes me laugh because the establishment is just frantic to maintain the status quo in Pima County, and they're willing to fabricate just horrible stories and lies about me to retain their stranglehold on Pima County. And the voters don't buy it. I'm sorry, name-calling is not what they want to hear. They want to hear a discussion on the issues. People are sick and tired of the name-calling. I can tell you, the name-calling, the fabrications, the lies, they're tired of it. They want a honest debate about the issues and what my position is versus Ms. Young Wright's position. Name-calling and trying to paint people as extremists, you know, I just think we need to end those days and work on the issues instead of this juvenile behavior. And, you know, when I listen to Ms. Young Wright, she's not going to rock the boat. She's the person who tried to stop the building of Ironwood Ridge High School that cost the Pima County taxpayers millions of dollars. We have to stop this anti-growth mentality and start understanding that if we are going to bring jobs and business into Pima County, we need to have schools for our children. We don't need to fight them. This is the mentality that has kept this town stagnant with the boarded up storefronts and looking like it does. When you don't have a thriving economy, you have roads falling apart because you don't have the tax base. You have weeds in the median, and this is no way to attract business to Pima County. So my approach, Nancy and I are very different people. And we will have very different approaches. And I believe that my approach will appeal to the independents and the Democrats alike. I've talked to many of them, and they're ready for jobs. They're ready for someone who has new ideas. And people making a career out of politics, I think people are tired of that. That was proven in this past election. People that have been part of the establishment here in Pima County and politicians, they want new voices. They want to try something different, and they want someone that's going to represent them and not the special interest.
So I want to ask you a question similar to the one that I asked Nancy, which is about the county budget. Ann Day, who you're seeking to replace, voted for the budget this year, but that was the first time she's done that in more than 7 years. She and Ray Carroll have been consistent no votes on the budget, mostly because of the tax rate and the spending. So if you'd been on the board, would you have voted for this budget? And if not, what needed to be different in the budget that would have allowed you to vote for it?
No, I would not. One of the things, I've been going to the meetings for 5 years, and one of the things that I see happening when I go to these meetings, I can give you a specific example, is they move $23 million out of the general fund over to a capital project. And this happens often. And when they do that, they're taking money away from our operating budget. And this is taking money that, in my opinion, and I spoke out at this meeting, that they should use these monies for the roads and not for overrun bond projects. And that courthouse project is overrun by a huge percentage. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but if we need to look at all of the departments, and I believe in zero-based budgeting, we need to get down and look and see where are we doing things correctly and where can we cut. And some departments may need more money, such as the Department of Transportation, in my opinion. There's something very wrong there. It doesn't take an accountant to figure out that we have very serious issues with our roads. Individuals have been injured. I just talked to a young man the other day who fell at the U of A and sprained his ankle in a pothole. And there was another case where the city of Tucson was sued and had to pay $60,000 to an individual who was on a motorcycle. So that is definitely a department that needs more money, and we need to get in there and find out what's happening, get into the details, where the money's going.
So we've only got about 30 seconds left, and I want to get in a quick question about the bond package. There's bond packages waiting in the wings. Do you think those need to go forward in the next year, or no?
No, I believe these packages need to be put on hold. We need to get our spending under control before we move forward with any more bond debt, because we're in debt and the taxpayers can't afford increased taxes. So we need to stop spending. We need to look at what we're doing now and move forward very cautiously.
And we're out of time. Allie, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate it. We'll be right back with Demian Klinko, Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Allie.
SRN News. I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The people who will introduce Mitt Romney at tonight's Republican National Convention include members of the Mormon Church, former business associates, and past Olympic athletes. Romney's expected to give Americans a different view of himself than he's presented in the past. Although there have been some bursts of sunshine today around New Orleans, areas north and south of the city continue to be plagued by heavy rain and flooding from Tropical Storm Isaac. Britain and France say they're not ruling out any options in Syria, including a military-enforced no-fly zone to protect civilians trying to get away from the civil war. On Wall Street, the Dow is down about 75 points at 13,033. The NASDAQ is off 25. More details at srnnews.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable rugs looking like new with Arizona's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration. Karimi specializes in restoring antique silk and Navajo rugs with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at East Fort Lowell and Dodge and say hello to owner-operator Amir Karimi. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. It's KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM. I am not Bill Buckmaster. The Billster is taking some time off this week for health reasons. I am Mark B. Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, who foolishly agreed to fill in for the double B today. Bill gave me a list of stuff I'm supposed to say, and one of them is this. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available for your home or business. That needs a period in there somewhere. Joining me now on the show is Demian Klinko, president of the Historic Tucson Preservation Foundation. Demian, welcome.
Thank you so
Thanks
much
for being here. Am I saying your name right?
You are saying it correctly.
Outstanding. I was worried about that. You need to get closer to the microphone there, I think, is the sign that it's being made to me through the window that I can't hear the producer. So tell us a little bit about the foundation and what it does and what it hopes to do.
Well, so the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation was established in 1984 with a mission to preserve Tucson's unique architectural environment. And by the mid-90s, the organization had really gone dormant. And about 4 years ago, I was asked if I would lead a task force to sort of reconstruct the organization. So I brought together a large group of people who were interested in preservation in our community, and we really relaunched the organization with a renewed vision and concepts on how we could really work to retain and protect our region's unique architectural environment.
And you've got a number of projects that you're working on. One of the coolest ones, I think, is the neon sign preservation, trying to preserve some of the old signs. You know, when Tucson was a tourist town, it had two main drags coming into it, north and south, and they were lined with hotels and all these other great buildings with these neon signs. So what's all that about, and where are those signs ending up? Are they staying where they were, or are they having to be moved?
So this was a really great project. It took about 2.5 years from start to finish, and one of the things that the Preservation Foundation is really interested in doing is providing catalyst projects and that can sort of act as models to be able to change policy. So we said, you know, these neon signs they're really eclectic, they're dynamic, they're part of our mid-century modern streetscape, and they certainly are worthy of preservation. But the city of Tucson sign code actually made them illegal. And so if the signs needed to be fixed or they needed to be taken down, they couldn't be put back up. And so over time, through attrition, we lost dozens and dozens of these wonderful dynamic signs. But what are left, were decaying out in the Sonoran Desert environment. So we said, well, what could we do? So we said we acquired a series of signs that had been taken down and had been salvaged and saved by members of the community. And we said, let's get those restored. And as part of that restoration effort, we worked with the city of Tucson. We worked with the sign code administrator. We worked with the Citizen Sign Code Advisory Committee, the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission, and a slew of other stakeholders. And we were actually able to craft a new piece of city policy, an ordinance that actually laid out criteria for historic landmark signs. And we restored the four signs, which was the Tropicana, the Tropicana Motor Court, the Old Magic Carpet Golf sign, the Arizona Motor Court, and the Medina Sporting Goods sign.
Is that the one with the diving girl?
No, the diving girl is actually the Old Pueblo Hotel and Apartments, and that was restored privately after we were able to change city policy. So we partnered with Pima Community College and the downtown campus, and we actually reinstalled those signs along Drachman between Oracle and Stone. So every night they light up on the edge of Pima Community College's downtown campus. And Pima Community College was an incredible partner in this project. And one of the secondary outcomes is that because we did this and the tremendous amount of interest and attention that we received, a number of private business owners who owned these signs are now investing into the restoration of their signs.
Yes.
And we created a driving guide to the best neon signs of Tucson, which is free, and it's you can find it in different places around the community.
And one of the things that I immediately thought about when I heard about this program was a neon sign that doesn't get the glow is a really sad thing. However, it seemed to be something that would run directly into the dark skies ordinance. So how do you get these signs to be turned on and show off their cool colors without making the astronomers mad?
Well, so first of all, neon signs don't produce a tremendous amount of lumens, but they also there are also very few of them. There's maybe 30 really dynamic mid-century modern signs left in our city that are worthy of designation and preservation. There might be a few more that are hiding out there, but there's sort of this bulk core of them. And there are so few that are being restored because it is so expensive and such a process to get to that preservation goal. It really takes an incredible energy and effort and enthusiasm from the owners. Picaretta Davis Law Firm, who owned the Diving Girl sign on South 6th, this was something that they had wanted to do for decades since they bought and restored their building. And so because of the sign code change, they were able to make this investment. And what's happened is that when you walk down South 6th, that sign every night is turned on, and it transforms the dynamism of the street. It activates it, and it changes the character of the city.
And one of the other things that you're trying to do is preserve some of the old historic buildings in town. I know you're working on the Marist College, which just got a cash infusion from the city, which had some controversy tied to it. What's the point of saving old buildings? Why do it? Is there an economic angle to
it? Well, for me, it's about historic preservation, and it's about the long-term livability of our city. In Tucson, over 21,000 jobs are tied to tourism, and over $2 billion is brought into our economy annually from tourism in Tucson. And historic preservation is a key to that component. People come to the Sonoran Desert. They want to experience the Southwest. And our city and our sense of place is defined by the historic resources that are in our urban core. And if we don't protect and manage and maintain those and care for them, then we really lose this incredible asset and we'll watch tourism dwindle.
So is there a list of the most endangered species, if you will, of buildings that, other than the Marist, that you're working on to try and develop the funds and the community support to protect?
So the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, we really try to be as nimble as possible and to sort of react to what are the climate and changing conditions around different buildings. We have an internal list that always has about 8 to 10 buildings on it that we sort of monitor and track. In addition to the Marist College, which we've put a lot of energy and effort to, and that's really been a partnership of the Diocese of Tucson, the City of Tucson, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, all working together to try to find a path to preservation. We've invested a lot of energy in the recent months into the landscape that surrounds the Tucson Community Center, also the Tucson Convention Center. The two names are interchangeable. The landscape was designed by Garrett Ekbo, who was one of the nation's foremost mid-century modernist landscape architects. And this is one of three major civic spaces that he designed in the U.S. And he was part of the Harvard Revolution. He came out of Berkeley. And his work is really being documented, studied, and celebrated across the country. And we have this unique resource in the heart of downtown. It was built in 1971, so it's really from the recent past. And it takes people a little time to sort of think about what is historic today. But this landscape is an incredible asset that really needs to be managed and conserved carefully. Over the years, we've sort of forgot that it was designed by this major landscape architect who helped create and define the modernist landscape movement. And it has slowly deteriorated, and systems have failed, and trees have died, and holes have been filled in with cement, and it's used as a parking lot, and there's all these sort of issues. And so one of the things that we did over the last number of months was begin to develop a conservation plan to help guide the long-term management and look for sustainable solutions to how to manage the fountains and the landscape moving forward.
And the city's been talking about rebuilding that, so would this area survive a reconstruction?
My hope is that, again, through being very proactive and identifying these sorts of resources now, that there's really consideration given as redevelopment occurs.
And this, you're talking about the area that's over by where the Fremont House is, and it's between the community center and the music hall.
Yeah, the area between the music hall, the Leo Rich Theater,
and it's got those multi levels, and it's
it
a really
has
cool area. I never thought of it
concrete
as being something that was designed as, you know, that's architectural, but it is a cool spot.
And Garrett Nekpa, his concept when he was brought to Tucson to design this landscape was to bring Sabino Canyon to the urban core. And the fountains were meant to actually be gotten into and used in the summertime by families and kids. And they were actually meant to be dynamic and really part of the urban landscape.
That sounds like something the liability lawyers probably put a stop to.
I would think you're correct on that.
So one of the things that I'm interested in is where you draw your funds from. And the state lottery used to provide funds for historic preservation, but the last few years the legislature has been sweeping those funds. Any chance of those funds coming back? And without them, where are we drawing the funds to do these preservations?
So major projects have traditionally found multiple financial resources, including the Heritage Fund, which you are correct, the state legislature has swept again and again. I hope that as the economy begins to recover, the legislature in their wisdom will begin to say, maybe these are funds that should be returned. I know there is a group of people as part of the Arizona Preservation Foundation who are working to advocate for that. We draw our funds almost exclusively from private interests and private donors throughout our community who really care about preservation in our city. And it's through their generosity and through, I think, projects that capture the public's imagination and people see potential that we're able to be as successful as we are.
We're almost out of time. If people are interested in the Historic Preservation Foundation, where do they go to get information?
To volunteer, to sign up for our newsletters, visit www.preservetucson.org.
Damien, thanks for being here today. I'm passionate about history, and I think it's important what you're doing, and I wish you all the best success. So we're going to be back after the break with Anthony Jimeno to talk about the first game of the Wildcat season, Bear Down.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pedorthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and Fifth. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowland Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchases, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than 2 file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at CoxBusinessAZ.com.
We're back. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 10:30 a.m. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico, just 3.5 hours east of Tucson. Arts, hiking, birding, Silver City's historic downtown. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico make a wonderful and cool mountain weekend getaway this Labor Day week. And there is plenty of great places to stay, including the Bear Mountain Lodge and the Cottage of Whispering Canyon. For more information, log on to southwestmexico.org. My next guest on the phone here is Anthony Jimino, the other half of the staff at TucsonCitizen.com, sports writer, columnist, cover of all things U of A sports. Anthony, how you doing?
Other than the flat tire on the way to the studio, I'm doing great.
Sure. So just a minute. You forgot, and you know, you're using the flat tire as an excuse, right?
I'm gonna take a picture of myself next in this very fine Panda Express parking lot with my little spare tire on. Text it to you just to prove it.
Well, hopefully you've got AAA and you got someone to come to take care of that for you. So the new era begins on Saturday, and it's not just a new conference. It's just a non-conference game. It's Rich Rod is still trying to figure out, what kind of hand he's been dealt, as Coach Norman Dale might have put it. So what are some of the keys that fans need to be looking for in Saturday's game?
I think the first thing that will be apparent and probably most important is where it all starts is they need to play fast on offense. We know Rich doesn't like to huddle. He's not going to huddle. He wants to basically run a play, get that ball snapped within about 4 or 5 seconds of it being spotted by the official. And that's the most fundamental basic thing they can do right is play fast. Without that, the execution and stuff is all secondary. Just to that fundamental thing, it's why he was harping on conditioning from the very moment he got the job, through spring ball, through summer. They need to be in great shape to run as many plays and to play as fast as they want to.
Anything we need to be looking at for in terms of Toledo? Our fellow blogger on TucsonCitizen.com, Scott Terrell, wrote today that the Toledo offense is nothing to sneeze at. They've scored quite a lot of points in their last few games last year.
They are a really good team from the MAC conference. They're picked to win. They're half of that league. They have two experienced quarterbacks coming back who can. Or a little bit of they can do some dual threat stuff and then the passing game and the running game. I know Toledo will have Rich Rodriguez's attention because Toledo, in Rich's first year at Michigan, went into Ann Arbor and beat the Wolverines. So there's certainly not going to be any of that kind of playing down the opponent from Rich's point of view. What's really scary is that Toledo could be even better. Their best player, a little receiver named Eric Page, left early for the NFL draft. Unfortunately for him, he tore his ACL in NFL camp. But if he was there on that Toledo offense, he's one of the best receivers. He would have been one of the best receivers in the country. And basically, you know, without him, I think they could still score some points. And chances are we're looking at what should at least be entertaining, because it should be a shootout on Saturday night.
Yeah, the last time we saw Matt Scott start a game, it was filling in for an injured Nick Foles, and he did okay. It wasn't anything stellar. It was a good fill-in job as for a starting job. Before that was in 2009, though, which is when he had gotten the starting nod for the season by Mike Stoops. And he was in that Iowa game, and he looked like a deer in the headlights, and he got benched, and the Nick Foles era began, and he sent about rewriting the record book. So what is it about Matt Scott? You think he's up for it for this for his last chance at football, his final season of football, or do you think he's just a practice field star?
I think he's the least of Arizona's worries. And you mentioned kind of his second chance, his second opportunity. And I think that's what he's really, really grasped this time around. He talked this week about, you know, when he was a starter as a sophomore, he was 18 years old. Yeah, he probably took that a little for granted. And he probably thought, you know, I'm going to be the man around here for the next few years and run off to the NFL. And something good often happens when a player like that is humbled. And Matt, you often see from a media perspective a change in guys as they become seniors. And Matt wasn't always, he just wasn't always with, you know, in interview settings. He wasn't very gregarious. He didn't open up. Just a little short with everybody, which was a real contrast to Nick. And this year, Matt actually worked on that particular skill in the spring. You know, he worked with people to just to open up.
He practiced being nicer?
To be not necessarily nicer, but it's all part of, if he's going to be the face of the program, this is part of what it all entails. And even starting with Pac-12 Media Day, where he and Jake Fisher were Arizona's player representative, he's been a really positive face of the program. And this is his team, and that's part of embracing it all. So that part, I think, he's really done well. On the field, his skills fit this offense better than the previous offense. So I think Matt got really lucky, able to redshirt last year to come back, and then to have the Rich Rodriguez read option offense fall into his lap where he can use his running skills and his passing skills. And Rich was really lucky, too, when... You know, part of the reason he got off to such a horrible start at Michigan was in his opener in Ann Arbor, his quarterbacks were a walk-on and a 6'5 pocket passer named Stephen Threet, who ended up at ASU, two guys who just weren't capable of handling that offense right off the bat. And Matt gives Arizona at least a fighting chance of having that offense really hit the ground running.
So one of the unique things also about Rich Rod, other than his high-tempo style, is that weird defense that he runs, that 3-3-5 defense. Besides the depth issues, they're a little thin across the board, but the 3-3-5 seems kind of gimmicky. Can you describe it? What is the 3-3-5 defense, and what should we be looking for on Saturday?
It is a really... unique scheme in name. The coaches would tell you, it's really nothing more than a 3-4, and it's really versatile where it can morph into many, many different looks. But Jeff Castile, the defensive coordinator, and Rich have been running this offense for about 10 years. And the reason they went to it at West Virginia was early on in their tenure there, they realized they couldn't get those great and rare 300-pound, nasty defensive tackles who could plug the run and get after the quarterback. Those guys only exist in the SEC. So what they did was they said, well, these are the kind of athletes we have here. We can recruit kind of tweener hybrid athletes. So now you have linemen which are a little lighter and quicker. You have a lot of linebacker safety types in this defense. who are basically X factors. And they will come up close to the line of scrimmage. 3-3 with the two hybrid safeties really morphs into an 8-man front. And anybody in the back eight, from the linebackers and the safeties, they can blitz at any time. Arizona fans are going to see a lot more blitzing this year. Mike Stoops wasn't a big blitz guy. And you will see blitzing from everybody and anybody from anywhere. That's kind of the strength of this defense, where it is, there's a lot of disguise in it. The offense doesn't know if these hybrid athletes, are they going to be rushing? Are they going to be plugging? Are they going to be covering? And that gives the offense just a little moment of pause, maybe messes up their protection. And that's the strength of this defense, where it can create big plays off of that.
We're out of time. Anthony, thanks very much for doing this. I appreciate it. It's the end of the Buckmaster Show. I will be back tomorrow with Sarah Gasson and Dan Shearer for the Reporters Roundtable. This has been the Buckmaster Show.
KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, The Voice, Good News Radio Network.